Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, June 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, P&Z Approves Designation for CHAMPS, by Mella McEwen. Members of the Planning and Zoning Commission moved Midland's newest restaurant a step forward at Tuesday's meeting. Commissioners unanimously approved a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant for CHAMPS Sports Grill and Bar. The restaurant will occupy the former Brew Street location at 4610 North Garfield Street. Brian Burns, who made the request along with business partner Andre Patterson, said CHAMPS will feature a full menu, including appetizers, a couple of different burgers, salads, chicken fried dishes, steaks, and traditional sports grill fare like chicken wings. Burns said plans are to open the new restaurant in late July. The two owned and operated a CHAMPS sports grill and bar in Lubbock, but Patterson said they closed it during the COVID-19 pandemic. They explained that they are reopening CHAMPS in Midland because they also own and operate Horizon Transportation, a trucking company. Proposed hours for CHAMPS are from 11 a.m. to 2 a.m., Mondays through Sundays. This is question and answer. It is entitled, Mayor Reflects on Odessa's Emergency. Hoven wants to prioritize infrastructure as highest quality of life issue facing Odessa after main break. By Stuart Doreen. Last week, the break of a 24-inch transmission water line impacted the city of Odessa and its residents. Lack of water availability and boil water notices were part of the routine for a couple of days while the break was fixed, the water plant was back online and pressurizing, and the system was fully restored. Communities and residents from across the Permian Basin helped in any way they could, including handing out bottles of water or providing equipment for the infrastructure replacement. The episode brought state and national attention to Odessa. The city was even trending nationwide on Twitter. The Reporter-Telegram had an opportunity to communicate with Mayor Javier Hoven about the break and the efforts to bring water back to Odessa residents. MRT. At what point did you know the water break was going to be as significant as it became? Mayor Hoven. This is a three-part answer. The first sign of concern that this water line break was beyond what the city of Odessa normally experiences was the diameter of the pipe, 24 inches. Secondly, the inoperable diversion valve west of the break on 42nd Street and State Highway 385 elevated the concern by a big percentage. Lastly, the rapid pressurization and volume of water loss at a fast rate was the final determination, all that came to a head at 4 a.m. Tuesday, June 14th. As Odessans started to wake up to start their morning, we had to break the news of the severity of the line break and announce the decision to take the water treatment plant offline. MRT. Considering the age and condition of pipes under Midland and Odessa, how much more of this do you expect we will see? Mayor Hoven. The city of Odessa experiences breaks quite regularly, but normally during cold or freezing temperatures. The concern here is that this particular break occurred in the spring, not winter. Combining that fact with a valve failure elevates my concern to prioritize infrastructure as the highest quality of life issue facing our city, state, and nation. MRT. As the city of Odessa goes through budget season, will there be more attention given to this type of infrastructure improvement? Mayor Hoven. Budget time is here for the city of Odessa. The City Council discussion will focus on priorities and the scope of each project's costs, including the delivery of debt and timing, the use of bonds or certificates of obligation. There is a question here that really needs to be asked. Does this line break constitute an emergency or lack of prioritization of past councils? The City of Odessa's Infrastructure Master Plan has identified both water and sewer priorities, and yet in the past, this work hasn't been prioritized over other less important things. MRT. Is there misinformation about the pipe break, water system outage that you want to address? Mayor Hoven. Yes, I'd like to clarify that the City of Odessa and this City Council has failed to identify and prioritize the replacement of aging infrastructure. It's been my priority to propose placing on the ballot a city water and sewer underground infrastructure bond, along with a citywide road rebuild bond and a sewer plant bond. I also want to remove the ordinance allocating 1% of debt issuance to public art. That 1% of $95 million at the water treatment plant has to be spent on public art at the water treatment plant. Those monies are better to be reinvested in infrastructure. Art is important, but not at the expense of water and sewer, roads, etc. MRT. What was the thing you were most proud of when looking at the response? What was the area where you see room for improvement? Mayor Hoven. I'm most impressed by the response of our ICP team, the Public Works Department and city staff, the dedication to reestablish water to the residents, coordination of city services, accurate information from the Public Information Officer, OFR, OPD, and TEDM, and all the countless state agencies and federal and state officials. But I am most proud of what West Texans, both Odessa and Midland and around the state, did as they offered assistance. The countless restaurant owners in both cities who stepped up were a huge help. Thank you. Makes me proud to call West Texas home. On the second question, there's always room for improvement. Establishing a West Texas warehouse to store essentials, to respond faster to an emergency event, and cut our turnaround time from Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, for basic POE, water, etc. in bigger volume. I was informed that this warehouse idea is in discussion. This article is entitled Chevron CEO. Biden should change course from vilifying oil. By Kevin Crowley and Jennifer Jacobs, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth called on President Joe Biden to stop criticizing the oil and gas industry and demanded a change in approach toward U.S. energy policy. There are no easy fixes to record gasoline prices, but the administration needs to work with oil and gas producers, Wirth said in a letter ahead of a meeting with the Department of Energy this week. Wirth will be one of several CEOs gathering with U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm on Thursday in an attempt to develop policies that would help ease the pain at the pump. Your administration has largely sought to criticize and at times vilify our industry, Wirth wrote. These actions are not beneficial to meeting the challenges we face and are not what the American people deserve. With midterm elections just months away, Biden and his allies have sought to blame oil and gas companies for making excessive profits at a time of war in Europe and at consumers' expense. He called out ExxonMobil Corporation earlier this month for making more money than God and asked energy companies to reinvest more of their profits in short-term production. Last week, Biden allies pressed the case that refiners were taking advantage of high profit margins. Biden on Tuesday mocked Wirth's letter, characterizing the oil executive as mildly sensitive and telling reporters, I didn't know they'd get their feelings hurt that quickly. The president then repeated prior calls for more refining capacity and higher oil production. This idea that they don't have oil to drill and to bring up is simply not true, he said. We ought to be able to work something out whereby they're able to increase refining capacity and still not give up on transitioning to renewable energy. Many in the industry view Biden's call for more oil output as a frustratingly radical U-turn from earlier in his presidency when he canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, restricted oil leases, and called for a long-term phase-out of fossil fuels. You have called on our industry to increase energy production. We agree. Let's work together, Wirth said in the letter. He said Chevron needs clarity and consistency on a range of policies, including leasing and permitting on federal land, the ability to build infrastructure such as pipelines, and consideration of costs and benefits when developing regulations. This article is entitled, Affidavit Provides Details on False Report of Trooper Being Shot, by Mercedes Cordero. Lawrence Hawley, 72, who was arrested Thursday for calling in a report of kidnapping and shots fired, remained in the Midland County Jail on Tuesday. Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies responded at about 9:57 a.m. Thursday in reference to a shots fired call near County Road 320 and State Highway 349. Dispatch advised that the caller, identified as Hawley, stated someone was kidnapped and someone was also shot. Dispatch also advised that Hawley mentioned a trooper during the call. He stated that the person responsible was inside a trailer house. Based on the information dispatch received from Hawley, it was believed at that time that a Texas Department of Safety trooper had been shot, according to the arrest affidavit. Dispatch told deputies the Midland Fire Department and Rankin EMS, along with CareStar, were en route to the scene, according to the affidavit. When MCSO deputies arrived at the scene, they checked the property for gunshot victims but did not locate anyone, according to the affidavit. They then proceeded to evacuate residents who were to the west of the property. Investigators made contact with Hawley, who stated he called 911 after a black male had pulled a gun on him while riding his mule. He also stated the male ran to the east and shot a DPS trooper and his family, according to the affidavit. Hawley called 911 a second time to report EMS was on the scene and performing first aid on the trooper. Hawley told investigators that the male ran into an RV north of the property and was still inside, according to the affidavit. The Midland County SWAT team then searched the RV and found it empty, according to the affidavit. It was later discovered that Hawley owned and lived in the RV. Hawley was evaluated by the Midland County Mental Health Unit, which determined he did not meet the criteria. Hawley was charged with a false report inducing an emergency response, a Class A misdemeanor. Bond is set at $2,500. The following agencies responded to the call: Midland County Sheriff's Office, Criminal Investigation Division, Lone Star Fugitive Task Force, Mental Health Unit, SWAT, and Patrol Division. Texas Department of Safety troopers from Midland, Odessa, Rankin, Crane, and Big Lake. Texas Department of Safety Criminal Investigation Division, Ranger Division. Upton County Sheriff's Office, Midland County Justice of the Peace Death Investigator, and Midland County Warrant Services. This article is called Crime in Brief. Hunt on for man stealing gas buttons. Midland Crime Stoppers is searching for a man who has been allegedly vandalizing and stealing items off the gas pumps. The suspect, during the months of April to June, has been seen on surveillance stealing the yellow-grayed push buttons off gas pumps. The suspect pumps gas into his vehicle and, while waiting, steals the buttons, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. Businesses have spent more than $1,000 to repair and replace the buttons. He was last seen driving a white Pontiac passenger car. If you have any information on the suspect, call the hotline. Go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3 Tips in reference to MPD case 220-60630. You could earn a cash reward if the tip leads to an arrest or case solved. MPD search for burglary suspect. The Midland Police Department and Midland Crime Stoppers are seeking information that leads to the identity of a burglary suspect. The suspect went through work trucks left unlocked on June 13th at about 2 a.m. at the Mainstay Suites located at 2500 South La Mesa Road. The suspect stole items totaling more than $2,000. If you have any information on the suspect, call the hotline. Go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3TIPS in reference to case number 220-613043. You could earn a cash reward if the tip leads to an arrest or case solved. This article was written by Mercedes Cordero. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Federal Gas Tax Holiday Might Not Work, by Martin Paris and Devika Krishnakumar, Bloomberg. Suspending the federal gasoline tax may sound like welcome relief for U.S. drivers paying some of the highest pump prices on record right as the summer travel season kicks into high gear. But experts warn it could bring mixed results, or even higher gas prices in the end. On Monday, President Joe Biden said he's considering a federal gas tax holiday and will announce his decision by the end of the week. If enacted, the move would waive the 18.4-cent national tax currently tacked on each gallon of gasoline sold. In fact, that could save Americans about $70 million per day, said Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy, which tracks prices at 150,000 U.S. gas stations. National average gas prices are currently $4.97 a gallon, just shy of record prices recorded last week, according to Auto Club AAA. But waiving the tax could bring some surprising consequences. In fact, when some states have opted to suspend their own fuel taxes in the past, sometimes prices come back higher than what they would have been had the tax holiday never occurred, according to a study released last week from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. That appeared to be the case in Maryland, which earlier this year experimented with a month-long gas tax holiday, temporarily waiving state taxes of 36.1 cents per gallon on gasoline and 36.85 cents per gallon on diesel. Although the study found that prices went down in the short term, they spiked after the tax holiday expired on April 17th to higher than what they would have been without the tax holiday. Wharton could not be immediately reached for comment. Other states have also considered or enacted state tax holidays. New York suspended its 16 cents a gallon gas tax on June 1st for the rest of 2022. Georgia extended its 29 cents a gallon gas tax holiday through July 14th. Connecticut is waiving its 25 cents a gallon gas tax through June 30th. Florida has a 25.3 cents a gallon gas tax holiday planned for October. And although the deadline passed to suspend the July 1st gas tax increase in California, Governor Gavin Newsom has supported sending $400 to every registered vehicle owner in the state, capped at two checks per person. Several other states are currently evaluating some form of tax relief as well. The Maryland tax holiday cost the state an estimated $100 million, according to local reports. A federal holiday's impact would be even more severe. According to one February estimate, Suspending the federal gas tax through the end of the year would have cost around $20 billion. With revenues from the federal fuel tax used to finance the Highway Trust Fund, losing that source of income could impact the ability to repair and maintain highways, critics warn. One reason waiving fuel taxes to lower prices sometimes brings the opposite effect is because cheaper gas encourages more demand, in turn driving prices higher. It could exacerbate the imbalances between supply and demand, which is one reason prices are already high, DeHaan said, noting that Americans are collectively spending about $722 million more every day compared to a year ago for gasoline. Lowering price could boost demand and constrain supply at a time prices are already high. If the Biden administration were to waive the federal tax, it would be the latest in a series of moves intended to bring prices down, including releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, signing off on a less expensive ethanol-blended gasoline to be sold this summer, and encouraging oil producers to pump more. The impact at the pump so far has been modest, though prices have been inching lower for more than a week. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, June 22nd. Billy Henry. Billy Jean Denson Henry, beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and friend, went to be with her Lord and Savior on June 16th. A celebration of her life will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, June 21st at First Baptist Church Chapel, Midland, with Dr. Darren Wood and James Irvin officiating. Billy was born on January 7, 1928, in Haskell County, to Raymond and Isla Catherine Denson. Billy was preceded in death by her husband, James Henry, her parents, and a brother, Sonny Denson. She is survived by her daughters, Jean Catherine Stern, Lewis, Judy Beth Johnson, Ronald, 4 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. A visitation for Billy will be held Tuesday, June 21st, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. A funeral service will occur on Wednesday, June 22nd at 10 a.m. at First Baptist Church in Midland. A burial will occur Wednesday, June 22nd at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. Guadalupe Lupe Ortiz Sr. Guadalupe D. Ortiz Sr., 87, of La Mesa, passed away on June 17th in Greenwood. Lupe was born in Yorktown, Texas, the son of Domingo Ortiz and Carmelita Delgado, on March 11, 1935. Lupe was preceded in death by his siblings Abundio Ortiz, Severino Ortiz, Maclovio Ortiz, Ruben Ortiz, Teresa Lopez, and his daughter Cynthia Ann Ortiz Ramirez. Lupe is survived by his wife Otila G. Ortiz, his children Guadalupe Ortiz Jr. and wife Linda, Jesse Joe Ortiz and wife Jessica, Sandra Phillips and husband Dane, and Michael Ortiz and wife Stephanie, as well as his brother Oscar Ortiz and sister-in-law Estella. He had 19 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren. Mass was held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, June 21st, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, officiated by Father David Herrera. Interment followed at Serenity Memorial Gardens in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Russell Rusty Leon Freeman, Jr. Russell Rusty Leon Freeman, Jr., 73, of Midland, passed away June 19th at home surrounded by his family after a very brief battle with cancer. Rusty was born on November 14, 1948, to Nell and Russell Leon Freeman, Sr., in Baird, Texas. Rusty is survived by his wife Andrea, son Kevin and wife Ashley, daughter Carolyn and husband Sean Spears, son Jordan and wife Haley, four grandchildren, as well as his sister Janet and husband Dr. Grover Hubley, along with numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents Nell and Leon Freeman. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations in his honor be made to High Sky Children's Ranch in Midland. A memorial service will be held Friday, June 24th at 11 a.m. at First Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Apollinar Lara. Apollinar Lara, 69, of Midland, passed away June 13th. Remembered service will be held at 11:30 a.m. Friday, June 24th at the branch at NPW, with burial following at Resthaven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. C. Wendell Schoenberger. C. Wendell Schoenberger, 79, of Midland, passed away June 12th. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, June 30th at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home, and condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Diana Flores. Diana Flores, 33, of Midland, passed away June 16th. Viewing will be Wednesday, June 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is set for Thursday, June 23rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Florencio Ortiz. Florencio Ortiz, 73, of Midland, passed away June 17th. Celebration of life will be held at 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 9:30 a.m. Thursday, June 23rd at First Baptist Church, with interment following at Resthaven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mary Garrett. Mary Garrett, 78, of Midland, passed away June 20th. The family will receive guests from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, June 24th at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 25th at First Christian Church in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Thomas Cook. Thomas Cook, 85, of Midland, passed away June 16th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, August 26th at the branch at NPW. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 27th at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2022. Education Partnership Reveals Strategic Plan by Ruth Campbell. The Education Partnership of the Permian Basin on Tuesday revealed the 5-year strategic plan it has been working on for 8 months. Officials from area school districts, colleges, and other organizations came together at the Region 18 Education Center in person and virtually for the event. The Education Partnership, which unified with Educate Midland almost exactly a year ago, is a regional collective impact backbone organization that aligns educators, employers, and partners so students have seamless pathways through education and into the workforce, Executive Director Adrian Vega said. He said the plan provides a very clear roadmap with very specific priorities and objectives, whereas what we were doing prior was much more organic. There are three main goals of the organization: student impact, regional leadership, and organizational excellence. We exist to impact students, so that's where we want to contribute meaningful and equitability to improving cradle-to-career student outcomes, Vega said. We believe that if we can anchor on these pillars, that's really going to make an impact on our region and help make a difference for lives of kids cradle-to-career, he added. There are 9 priorities they want to focus on, such as increasing kindergarten and ultimately getting students to read on grade level, increasing college going and career entry. Right now, we're 8,000 positions shy that require a certain literacy level. In 10 more years, it's going to be more like 20,000+. It's going to keep going up, so we know that we need to increase college going and career entry, Vega added. We want to be seen as a highly respected convener and partner. We want you to feel that we bring value to our community. We want to be seen as a reliable source for regional education data and knowledge, to be able to help move the needle in all the work that we do. We want to use communications to drive impact, Vega said. Under organizational excellence, the partnership wants to optimize the governance structure, which means as they continue to grow, they might need to look at their broad configuration and different or additional representation, Vega said. They also want to grow organizational capacity and resources with sustainable funding. The Education Partnership currently has an Advance Together grant through the Dallas Federal Reserve and a Pathway grant through the Gates Foundation. Vega also talked about expanding the Education Partnership service area into other parts of Texas and New Mexico. In the basin, he said, a lot of student indicators and outcomes are lower than other parts of the state, which impacts the community in many different ways. The partnership has an Early Childhood Action Network and Grow Our Own Action Network. It has a separate middle school action network, but Vega said COVID curtailed that because they were going into the campuses. Lorraine Perryman, president of the Board of Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, said the strategic plan has been a long time coming. We have a very drilled-down 18-month step-by-step of what we want to accomplish in that time. Otherwise, it can become overwhelming because we have big goals in a big region. We have developed this in a way that we have benchmarks that we can keep ourselves focused on. Then we'll present follow-up information and discussions at this level and in our action networks, which are the boots on the ground, because they're the people that are really doing the work, Perryman said. The Education Partnership and Educate Midland were separate organizations that came together almost a year ago. As a result, they were able to focus on being an effective regional organization that would bring the entire region together. During the work on the strategic plan, Perryman said they talked to nearly every stakeholder, parents, community members, leaders of organizations and business and industry about what they would like to see and what their focus areas should be. Perriman added that there were a lot of ups and downs for a number of years because the organizations were doing duplicate work. She noted that it is going to be a long process to reach the organization's goals. We will bring data and unified approach to those solutions for the entire region, Perriman said. She said the issues that need the most immediate response are early childhood education and graduating students that are prepared for careers, the military, and higher education. So we need to help those kids as they go on into those different areas after they graduate from public education, Perriman said. Family of dead inmate files federal lawsuit. Lawsuit seeks at least $10 million and punitive damages by Kim Smith. The family of a 38-year-old Midland man who died at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center 2 years ago has filed a federal lawsuit against Ector County and the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Mary Howell is seeking at least $10 million in damages, plus an unspecified amount in punitive damages in the June 15, 2020 death of her son, Wallace Tremaine Howell III. The lawsuit, which was filed by Dallas attorneys Paul Stafford and Justin Moore, alleges deputies willfully, wantonly, and recklessly disregarded Howell's safety, violating his rights, and were inadequately trained in the handling of inmates through force. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths and Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said the county does not comment on pending litigation. The voicemail box of Ector County Attorney Lee McClendon was full and not accepting messages Tuesday. Howell was arrested on suspicion of speeding and evading arrest on June 15, 2020, around 12:40 a.m. After being booked into the jail, Howell and another inmate fought, and according to the lawsuit, Howell was beaten, tased, dry-shocked, pepper-sprayed, and restricted by ECSO personnel. Howell was found unresponsive around 6:15 a.m., and he was pronounced dead at Medical Center Hospital about an hour later, the lawsuit stated. During his autopsy, Howell was found with a torn, knotted plastic baggie in his small bowels. According to Odessa American Archives, former District Attorney Bobby Bland also said Howell's cause of death was accidental and due to methamphetamine toxicity. Defendants of Ector County used excessive force against Tremaine Howell, resulting in the serious bodily injury and death of Tremaine Howell, the lawsuit alleges. The lawsuit also notes that then-DA Bland announced on September 1, 2020, that the grand jury had declined to issue any criminal indictments in the case, but that Bland, in a press release, stated that the use of force by some of the officers involved in this case was excessive and should be reviewed by the ECSO. Body cam video obtained by the Odessa American showed Howell punching another inmate who was sitting on a bench. The video showed jail staff using a stun gun on a combative Howell three times and pepper spraying him once. When he attempted to run out of the cell, they stunned him three more times before eight jail staff members were able to place a still-struggling Howell in restraints. According to an autopsy report, authorities said Howell was placed in a wrap restraint device, taken to a shower to decontaminate, and placed in a padded cell. After Hal was found unresponsive, he was taken to the hospital where he was later pronounced dead. The attorneys who filed the lawsuit on behalf of Hal's mother, father, and daughter held a press conference outside the Ector County Courthouse following Bland's announcement in September 2020. Surrounded by 24 protesters, they vowed to seek justice for the Hal family. Quick hits. West of the Pecos Rodeo. West of the Pecos Rodeo has been scheduled through Saturday at the Buck Jackson Arena, 1556 South Cedar Street in Pecos. The rodeo will include rodeo parade, bull riding, bareback riding, team roping, PRCA, tie down roping, barrel race, old timers reunion, sheriff's posse nightly dance, hide race, wild cow milking, boot scramble, play day series, and more. For a complete schedule of events, tickets, or more information, visit PecosRodeo.com. Blood drives. By Talent has scheduled the following blood drives. Today, noon to 5 p.m. at Gravity, 32 County Road, 203, Pecos. Thursday, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., Kodiak Gas Services, 3110 South County Road, 1180 in Midland. Thursday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Music City Mall, 4101 East 42nd Street. To make an appointment, visit donorsbytalent.org. Lunch and Learn. CASA of West Texas, 1611 West Texas Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a lunch and learn event from noon to 1 p.m. today. Children in foster care are longing for a hero, a CASA volunteer. Young Adult Vision Boards. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Young Adult Vision Boards for ages 12 through 18 from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. today in the basement activity room. Odessan Arrested Following Wife's Death by Kim Smith. A 56-year-old Ector County man is facing a murder charge 1 month after his wife arrived at Medical Center Hospital with severe head trauma and died. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, Vitale Anthony Justice arrived at MCH in an ambulance along with his wife, Pamela Brown Justice, 55, around 2:40 a.m. May 17th. Justice told medical personnel his wife had fallen at their home on West Cassinar and suspected she'd had a stroke. Medical staff called ECSO because doctors did not believe the bruising all over her body was consistent with a fall and suspected it had been caused by physical abuse, the report stated. Although Pamela Justice could squeeze hands, she was unable to speak or write. The nursing staff told deputies Justice was acting strange and was showing photographs he had taken with his cell phone of Pam on the floor in areas of the residence where she is suspected to have incurred injury, the report stated. When the staff told Justice his wife was being admitted to the hospital, he said he had other things to do and left. When contacted by investigators, the report said Justice told them he was his wife's only caretaker. He also said he wasn't willing to speak with them at the sheriff's office because he'd spoken to two attorneys. After speaking with Justice, investigators learned Pamela Justice had died. The forensic pathologist who conducted Pamela Justice's autopsy said she died due to complications caused by her injuries and ruled her death a homicide, according to the report. When interviewed later at his home, Justice denied hurting his wife. He also reiterated that he was her only caretaker, although he said he'd asked several people for help and had family living on the same property, the report stated. Justice was booked into the Ector County Jail on Tuesday and is being held on $100,000 surety bond. Odessa man, his mom arrested, by OA News. An Odessa man wanted on outstanding warrants was arrested Friday along with his mom after police said she tried to stop them from arresting him. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers went to a home in the 900 block of West 39th Street looking for Robert Fernandez III, who was wanted in connection with an injury accident and on drug and weapons charges. Sabrina Fernandez, 41, told officers Robert, 18, was in the home, but then tried to stop officers from taking him into custody, allowing him to escape through the bedroom window, the reports stated. Officers who were wearing vests that said police on them and yelling at the teenagers to stop saw him jumping fences east of the house, the report stated. Officers obtained a search warrant for the house later that day and arrested the 18-year-old inside. According to the report, officers had to use physical force to get the teenager into the patrol car because he resisted and started to run. Because Sabrina Fernandez acknowledged during a traffic stop in May that she knew her son had multiple felony warrants and could be in trouble for hiding him, she was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of hindering the apprehension of a known felon, a Class 3 felony. She was released Saturday after posting a $20,000 surety bond. Robert Fernandez was booked on 6 outstanding warrants and suspicion of 3 counts of evidence arrest and 1 count of resisting arrest, search, or transportation. He remains in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds totaling $99,000. ECSO Investigating Fatal Fire by OA News. The Ector County Sheriff's Office is investigating the death of a man who was discovered inside a burning recreational vehicle early Tuesday morning. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said they received a 911 call around 5:30 a.m. about an RV fire in the 4300 block of Flamingo. And while Odessa fire rescue crews were extinguishing the blaze, they discovered a deceased man inside the RV. A second man was taken to the emergency room, but his condition is unknown at this time, Griffiths said. The fire has been deemed suspicious, and state fire marshals are assisting in the investigation, the sheriff said. The identity of the victim is being withheld until an autopsy has been completed, he said. Local news roundup. Police: woman confessed to killing her husband. An Odessa woman arrested Saturday on a murder charge confessed to shooting her husband, was unapologetic, and gave her children as the motive. An Odessa Police Department report details that Stephanie Diane Toole, 37, called 911 around 6:20 p.m. Saturday to say she'd just shot her husband. When police arrived at the home in the 2500 block of North Tom Green, they found Toole in the front yard. She told officers her husband, Joe Abril, 58, had been shot and was inside the house. She said the gun was also inside the house and said, "I wish I was sorry, but I'm not," according to the report. Officers found Abril suffering in the bathroom from multiple gunshot wounds to the chest and one to the back of his head, the report stated. He was pronounced dead at the hospital. Toole invoked her right to remain silent, but also continued to make statements such as, "No one messes with my kids," according to the report. Toole remained in the Ector County Jail as of Tuesday afternoon on a $100,000 surety bond. Odessan arrested on assault charges. A 30-year-old Odessa man was arrested on multiple aggravated assault charges Monday after family members told authorities he threatened them with kitchen knives. According to the Odessa Police Department report, police responded to the 1500 block of East 5th Street around 9 a.m. Monday after receiving a 911 call from the family of Paul Anthony Garcia Jr. The family told officers they were sitting in the living room talking when they saw Garcia shaking a set of kitchen knives. According to the report, the family told officers Garcia then grabbed several of the knives with both hands and came at them stating, "If you keep disrespecting me, I will kill you." At least one of the family members thought Garcia was on drugs, and all of them said they feared for their lives, the report stated. Garcia was booked into Ector County Jail on suspicion of 4 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. As of Tuesday afternoon, no bond had yet been set. Odessan jailed in aggravated assault case. A 58-year-old Odessa man, who authorities said failed to show up for his arraignment in an aggravated assault case last month, was arrested Saturday. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 51-year-old man called 911 around 7 p.m. March 27th to report a man with a gun outside of United Supermarket at University Boulevard in West County Road. The man told officers he had just gotten out of his car when a man driving a black sedan pulled up and stopped in front of his car where his family still sat. According to the report, the man said the driver of the car yelled at him to stop following him or he'd put a bullet in his head. The other man then pulled out a hunting-style rifle with a scope and pointed it at him before driving away, the report said. Officers corroborated the man's account with video surveillance, and they traced the license plate of the car to William Wade Kirby, according to the report. According to the police report, Kirby admitted in a phone conversation with investigators that he'd pointed his .22 caliber pellet gun at the other man and said he'd do it again if he ever caught the man following him again. Kirby was indicted on 1 count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on May 16th, but online Ector County court records show a warrant for his arrest was issued on June 3rd when he failed to appear at his May 31st arraignment. Court records also indicate Kirby's initial bond of $30,000 has been raised to $60,000. He remains in the Ector County Jail as of Tuesday afternoon. Odessan accused of threatening husband with gun. An Odessa woman was arrested Monday after her husband called 911 to say she'd threatened him with his shotgun. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers were dispatched to the 4600 block of Garden Lane around 7 p.m. Monday after receiving a call about a person with a gun. When officers arrived, they spoke with an 8-year-old in the house who told them that Akira Harrison, 22, got into an argument with her 47-year-old husband, and during the argument, Harrison grabbed a shotgun and said to him, "If you don't need me, then I don't need you." Officers found Harrison's husband at a different location. According to the report, he told them that while he and his wife were arguing, she grabbed a knife. He pushed her away and then walked to the garage to get away from her. He said Harrison punched him in the face, grabbed his shotgun from their bedroom, and because he didn't want to be shot in front of the children in the home, got in his car and left to call the police. Harrison was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She remains in the Ector County Jail Tuesday afternoon on a $25,000 surety bond.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.